Last Save Loaded, episode 399. And welcome to the Last Save Loaded podcast. It's a guest show this week. It's been a while since we've had a guest on, but I am your host for today. My name is Justin Smith, and hailing from, well, currently probably about 45, 50 minutes down the road from me, I'm not going to disclose the location. He might be on a witness protection program, but on loan from Midlife Gamer, it's Mr. Matthew Moore. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Justin. Lovely to be here. Thank you very much for asking me to come on this this fine episode 399.
Yes.
You're way past us from a numbers point of view, Chief.
From a numbers, but not from a length of a total time on air. So some of your shows are quite lengthy. Anyway, we're not going to talk about length because that, you know, don't want to embarrass anyone here. It's not about comparing. Matt, let's go back to the beginning, almost to the dawn of time, and tell me how Mr. Baldock and yourself came up with the idea of the Midlife Gamer podcast.
I think the idea came from the fact that it was kind of a new medium at the time, wasn't it? So I had just got myself an iMac. So it was like, oh, iTunes.
Let's just let people know how many years ago it was, based off what you told me earlier. And
oh, God.
You're nearly a teenager now.
27 days time, the first show went out would have gone out 13 years ago.
That's impressive. And you're still friends.
We still are.
Although your recording schedule is a bit less frequent as before.
Yes, this is true. I think we're for the past couple of years, we average maybe, if we're lucky, 7 a year.
But they're worth it when they come out.
Thank you very much. We do have an audience who stick with them. Bless us. But there's also stuff outside the podcast which makes it special and community led still.
Yeah, like talking about dogs and Matt. You've come up with real life meetups with your community, and having been to one as well, I can't remember if I've only been to one. I think I have only been to one, because normally when it was EGX in the Birmingham era, I would have been most of the time staying with my friend, and I know I got fed up with going to EGXs, so. It was a big event for me to turn up and share the infamous night where I shared a room with Colin when he fell over in the street outside the bar and cut his head open.
Oh, geez. Well, Colin's been a bunch of them parties. He very much enjoys them. He's usually very on form.
Yes. So, what happened? How did you meet Darren, and what made you decide to come in? So you were saying you'd got a Mac.
So yeah, I got a Mac and I had iTunes. So it was way before I had an iPhone or anything, and not really into the iPods. So, and I was like, okay, what's all this podcasting stuff about? So I was like, okay, I've heard about podcasts, which I always figured they were cut down, pre-recorded shows that have already aired, which you still get to today. And then I realized, no, a lot of this is content, it's custom content, and there's all the categories. So I was like, okay, what kind of categories are there? And I found that like shows like the 1UP show, when 1UP was one of the major sites, IGN was a different beast at the time, Giant Bong Past, which is something that I've held very close to my heart for years. I've been a subscriber to their stuff, like a paid for sub to them for a long time. And me and Darren met at work. We smoked, we went out, we spoke a lot. Because I was I was managing the testing for something, and he was like in the business, and they needed business people to come and do user acceptance testing. So they threw Dan in my way. Turns out we got on so well, and we shared this passion for gaming.
Yeah.
And I don't know where the idea came from, but because I had the Mac, it also had GarageBand. So yes. I was like, okay, well, it's possible for us to do this. So we tested it out one day with a couple of USB microphones. We found out at the time, I don't know if things have changed, but Mac OS wasn't able to support two different USB audio inputs. It right. wouldn't recognize it as two separate things. So we had to ask around and we did. We did a show and it was lost. And we've not been able to get hold of it. So there was one that did go out before episode one, and I think it was an E3 special. God, I'd love to imagine what was happening at E3 13 years ago.
Well, that would have been announcing the Xbox 360.
Yes, God, do you remember that? That was awesome. but we decided to start the podcast. We were spitballing names. I was really happy with what we dropped on. And then had to get used to it. So I forget the original setup of microphones, but I think we were forced because of the OS to go hardwired. So we were fortunate. So I wouldn't say unlike, but it did seem a bit unlike. So our peers at the time, I guess, unless you were working in it and it was your job, chances are your locality's not close, and maybe you're people who've met on Xbox Live or through World of Warcraft or anything like that.
Yeah.
So we were lucky enough to be able to do it face-to-face. So we bought the hardware. So we got a couple of XLR mics. We got a mixing desk for that to go in. And then I think I had to get a FireWire adapter for the Mac for the audio to go in as a single source. And it was fantastic because I had direct, live, in real time access to our levels from a physical point of view. And it was so good to sort of record like that. So the editing at the time, imagine this. It was all on one file. It was one audio file.
Which is fine if you don't talk over each other. And when you're recording face-to-face, it's a lot easier to make sure you don't, because you can go, you're talking, I'll shut up for a minute. But definitely...
That brings some of its some sort of unique pros and cons, I found. So you're absolutely right. One of the pros of that is that I could be talking to you and I can be in the middle of a conversation. Darren, no, this is why I think I'm right about blah, blah, blah. And I'll stop and I'll say, why are you looking at me like that? Because I can read his body language immediately and there's no lag, there's nothing like that. So that was great to do that. And the energy and it bounced off each other and the laughter was more infectious. But sometimes there would be, particularly early on, because when you're getting your feet wet at this, you don't know, like there was no concept of what success was. There was no concept of what was going to happen with this, with the ability to do this. So we were very sort of nervous and shy about it. So occasionally one of us would have like a brain fart where we'd be like sat there going like, hang on a minute. Am I talking to you? Am I talking to listeners who might or might not be there? It's such a weird thing.
Yeah. I think I had the luxury of having listened to podcasts for a couple of years before I got him onto the scene. For me, it was a case of I bought an iPod mini. And then had iTunes, and I started thinking, well, I don't just want to listen to music. You know, when I'm like having time with my pets, I want to listen to dialogue, to conversation, to, you know, people talking about stuff and doing reviews and things. And yeah, just stuck a few keywords into iTunes back then of like, video game podcast, and started from there. And yeah, like you say, I've got the benefit of, I know my format on LSL is, it's just may as well be two people talking, and the listeners will just be people that are hearing the conversation. But with the fact that we do listener comments and stuff like that afterwards, we try and where as much as possible involve that community so that it doesn't just seem like, you know, a bunch of people talking at you rather than you being in the room.
And you just hit on the head one of the best parts about podcasting, particularly when you do realize that there's a listenership there, is that you need to find a way of gauging what your success is. So is it just on the numbers? Because even back then you'd have sort of basic numbers about what you're seeing.
Yeah.
In fact, I can date, here's something that will date when we first set this up. the so we've used Libsyn now for as long as I can remember as a hosting service. Really, really good. Before that, I was using, I forget their name, but obviously Ricky Gervais sort of brought podcasting to a big stage, particularly in the UK, and he would always be sponsored by a hosting company. I forget their name. So I went with them, and the subscription level wasn't based on bandwidth like it is now. It's based on how many downloads it can accept.
Yeah.
So we and I just figured, okay, we'll just go for the bottom one. And then we start getting a few more listeners, and we start getting into our groove, and I get an email from them. They're like, good news, mate. Great news. Your show's dead successful. Give us some more money.
Yeah, we did have this. That's how ours is. We pay for a certain amount of shows to be hosted. I mean, it works out to about 3 gigs worth of file can be on the server at any time. And as I upload this one, I'll be deleting off like the oldest one. And I've got all the old shows on a hard drive, so I've got them for prosperity. Well, at least as many as I could get hold of. And yeah, we have a 3 gig limit, but we also have the bandwidth, and it shows like this little tracker. If you log into the website, it'll show this tracker saying how many gigs worth of file has been downloaded across the month. And there was a period where we were kind of like, you know, just creeping over. And then it just got to the point, it's like, okay, we need to upgrade the plan now. And that Colm and I were never doing this show to be famous or anything like that. And, you know, there are definitely podcasts out there where they're doing it as a job. And this is just a hobby. And the fact that you are as relaxed behind the mic as you are shows, on one hand, years of doing it, but on the other hand, an appreciation for knowing it's just chatting. It's just having a dialogue.
In it. And I don't know about you, but I found that, obviously I was working from home a fair bit anyway, but it's that skill, the fact that I've been doing it for so long and I can feel incredibly comfortable behind a microphone with a camera on, much more so than being in an office full of 40 people. But I will... And I think I probably am doing it a little bit consciously, kind of forcing myself to be a bit more animated, gesture with my hands, try and draw attention if I'm saying something.
You're putting on a DJ voice. That's what you're doing.
Well, it turns out that all of a sudden I'm the guy who records all of the all the little video demos we have to do, because everyone loves listening to my voice.
There are certainly less clear and less well enunciated voices out there in the podcasting world.
Only if I've not had a drink, and I've not. I mean, you must know as well, fella, from the editing process, is that you become incredibly self-critical, phenomenally, and so small things can wind you up. And we were bullshitting early and joking about taking out the ums and the ahs and the clicks and the ticks and the toots.
Absolutely.
Sometimes I've been too drunk and too out of control, probably too excitable maybe in some shows, particularly when we tried doing around a live thing with one microphone in the middle after our first our first Eurogamer, probably 11 years ago, 10 years ago maybe, and I had to edit that back and try and turn it into a show, and the entire time I was just cringing, thinking, Matty, shut up, stop arguing, who are you arguing with, what is your point, you don't have one.
I get overly aware of the amount of ums and ers I do. And truth be told, as we're revealing the secrets behind the editing process, I do sometimes like delete how long the pauses are when I'm trying to like compose the sentence like this. And I try and make it sound much more natural. But also, I will learn to identify the sound wave of at least in my voice, and I can start going, right, we'll leave that one in because it flows with the dialogue, but we'll take that one out when you're just saying but not actually saying anything else at all.
It's also that thing whereas if you have to cut something out, let's say I fluff a line and I have to repeat the line, so you have to go and get rid of the fluff bit and then pull everything forward a little bit, it's like, oh my god, you could tell there's a cut there. I've got to find some breath, like a few half a second of breath from the previously bit that's gonna go to make it flow. And I'm like, is anybody else listening to it with this much level of scrutiny than us?
Do you know, I have had a couple of listeners over the years sort of say, I can tell the difference of who's doing the edit based off like how sharp the cuts are between sentences and things like that. So I do spend a lot longer doing the editing than I really should, but it's like you say, it's your baby. It's something you take a lot of pride in the production value of. And there's plenty of podcasts out there that have their niche and, you know, just record on Skype, record the call itself, and then just go, right, there's half an hour, dump it online, podcast done, off we go, and do no editing whatsoever. And you can always tell those ones because halfway through, someone will go robotic and it's like, yeah, you've done no editing to resolve that, have you?
Overly. I mean, I know that a very early complaint were obviously people eating. I don't think anyone does that anymore too much, but like heavy hands on keyboards and those small little quality of life things that you can do for your listeners goes a long way.
Yeah. Colin would pick me up for, I don't know if this comes out, but that's me tapping my foot. And also clicking on the mouse. So I've now, the current keyboard I'm using, I can't do that very quietly, so you can really tell some things, but it could be worse. I could have a micro-switched one where it just clicks every time.
No, I couldn't do that.
I see, if I don't press it down all the way, I can just about get it to move.
Yeah, you just tease that. You just tease them arrow keys. Just, you can do it.
Just stroke the keyboard. Now, before we go on to the LSL infamous guest questions, which always make people go, that's an interesting question. We need to discuss something that happened for us 5 years ago. And it involved the very first, if I remember correctly, the very first meeting of myself and Matt. And there was I tried to have a nice selfie and Matt pulled the weirdest face. But yeah, I was at the time in the Swindon board game group, and I guess I still am, even though we don't really meet up for obvious reasons at the moment with social distancing and whatnot. But the question had been brought up amongst my group of friends of playing D&D, and everyone was going, oh, I'd like to do it, but I've never done it before, and we don't have a dungeon master. And eventually it got to the point where I kind of went, look, if no one else is going to do it, I don't mind doing it. And I don't have experience, but if you never played it, you don't have experience of knowing whether I'm bad at it. So we'll give it a go. And then someone else had popped up in on the forum or the message group, whatever it was back then, and said, oh, well, I've got an RPG night that I'm going to be hosting in Farringdon. And I was like, I know someone who lives in Farringdon, as you did at the time. And so I sent you a message saying, hey, what do you think about D&D? And you were kind enough to turn up and get involved. And it was an interesting night. It certainly wasn't what I expected to be.
Yeah, that was not D&D. No. Not a dice to be seen, if memory is correct. I can't. No. All I remember from it is recognising a couple of the guys from the local who I've never spoken to, have never given me the time of day before, and we sat down and the guy's talking about how it's such a complex mind, it's very role-playing, and you really get into your character, and he says something like, people suggest it's all about confrontation and situational considerations, maybe. He says, ooh, somebody asked if we could do the Cold War scenario, but I thought that might be a bit much on us because not everyone here has played this before. And I'm thinking, what the hell have you signed me up to here?
At the same time, I'm thinking, Matt's going to kill me.
And so we're there talking and I'm trying to take it in and I'm really struggling. And I was also a bit of a... I wasn't as considerate at the time, so I took a few drinks with me as well.
I think you were actually, a little bit ill on the night, and you'd come out because I'd asked you, but you were, yeah, I think you were feeling a bit fluey.
Yeah, I was certainly not on form. But between each round, I think we all had to, somebody maybe had to pick one of the characters to go and have a private conversation with. And of course, I did my little character sheet that said I was Olaf Crunch and Doodle. And here, and this is this, and I should have already been reading it and working out who I am, working out how I would respond to questions from maybe a general. So the guy goes, I want to go and speak with Olaf. I'm like, all right. And so me and him go around the corner, and he goes, sorry, what's your name? And I put my hand out, went, I'm Matt. And straight away he was like, this guy.
You're not playing by the rules. You're supposed to be Olaf all night. Basically what we got was this guy was trying to run this situation where around the table he said, you're going to be a general, you're going to be in charge of these troops, you're going to be the local police chief with a small militia, you're going to be the governor, and I don't know if we all got different win conditions, but I think we did. And like some of them had, yeah, you have to start a fight between the local militia and the town or whatever. And I had I think my win condition was basically, as long as all out war doesn't break out, you win. So I was like trying to be diplomatic and going, yeah, I'm just going to take the troops off to the jungle, like to the forest, and we're going to be completely away from everyone because they're going to try and upgrade the militia to an army. And I just left thinking, what the hell was that? I have no idea whether this has helped me with the idea of D&D or not. I mean, roleplay? Okay, maybe. But it was just a guy going, what are you going to do? And you had a few minutes to go, I'm going to, I don't know, push these toys to that space on the table? Oh, okay, yes.
Nah, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Some people, I mean, look, they enjoy it.
Yeah.
More power to him.
Well, he, I think he worked at the Cranfield University, up at Shrivenham, the military one. Because I think when he then said he was going to do a proper D&D one shot, he held it up there amongst the tanks. And even then, it was a case of he pretty much told us what was happening rather than let us try. And I still came back and he was going, okay, so when should we do the next session? I left going, no, do you know what? I'm just going to do it. And if I'm bad, I'm bad. But I can't do this again because I'm losing the will to live.
Are we assuming he doesn't listen to either of our shows?
I mean, if he does, he may not even remember who we are. I did see him at the board game group in Swindon, I think once after that. But it clearly wasn't as confrontational as he might like, so he probably didn't get much from that. But oh yeah, that was a weird day, and I did feel really bad for like asking you to come down and it be just nothing like what I envisioned it might be.
Oh no, but I got to hang out with you, so all was good in the world.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed actually meeting you, so. It would then not be until the MLGX in Birmingham that I went to that I remember doing karaoke toward the end of the night on I Love Rock and Roll, because I figured if I've got no voice by this point, everyone else will sing the words for me.
that's some hella logic there, Justin.
I'll tell you what, I went to the Dominican Republic on holiday in about 2007. And someone said there, if you're ever roped into doing karaoke, I've got the ultimate song for you. It's called Tequila. That song. Because the only words are tequila. And that's it. So you just manage to get away without saying anything. Right. Let's move on to the fabled guest questions. And if you're
I've never heard these before. Are they the same questions each time?
They are the same questions, but normally we just don't read them out in like the 1 to 10 that they're on the screen. I can't take credit for these. These were from the original hosts, Jake and Joey, and
are they getting commissioned still?
Oh no! They handed over the rights when I took it forward.
and Falls, the worst decision of their life.
So yes, they're not on commission. Number one. I wish I had some kind of like, overlay. Number one. Right. Where does your gamertag/gamer ID come from? Of course, the Mantis Matt.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and this has frustrated me since, because I messed it up. I messed it up on day one, Justin. My first ever unique ID into the internet, and I messed it up. Tell lights my second. It's my second. My first was had Saruman in the name because I was a bit of a Lord of the Rings fan. But yep. When it came to, so when would I have set up Mantis Matt? It must have been a long time ago. I think I used to join Microsoft Comic Chat. Did you ever used to play on Microsoft Comic Chat?
No, that my first online experience was in sort of the latter part of the 90s on the MSN Gaming Zone. So more or less the same sort of thing. And that's where I got the On Your Six from
yes.
playing X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, and, you know, being like, I'm on your six and being behind someone. So
yes.
It's kind
a very,
of worked,
very, very witty name. I always liked it.
So how did you get it wrong?
why it was picked was I was just trying to think of anything quickly.
Yeah.
And Mantis came from the fact that when I was younger, I'll say the way I used to say it when I thought it was cool. Yeah. Well, used to study martial arts, didn't I, Chief? Yeah. Praying Mantis, Southern Chowgar, Praying Mantis Kung Fu, I did. I didn't really do it. Well, I did, but like not properly. What are you talking about? So I came up with Mantis Matt. I'm like, that kind of rolls off the tongue quite nicely.
Yeah.
But then it wasn't until a number of years later where then I adopted it as my primary email address as a four before the dot, whatever. good luck finding out which one it is, people. MantisMatt@yahoo.net isn't going to be happy. but the trouble is the fact that it's one T in Matt, but I spell my name with two T's.
Yes. I have to be honest, when I wrote you into the show notes, I felt awkward putting it with two T's because I've seen it with one for so many times. I feel dirty. My former manager was a Matt. Well, he was a Matthew. He is a Matthew, but he was a Matt with one T, and it confused us all the time when you're trying to write emails and you put like Dear Matt, MAT, and Matt, MAWT. Well, at least you can work out who's who. Okay, so number two, and I think you've been playing games as long as I have, so maybe this will be an answer that I've previously had before, but what is your earliest gaming memory?
So I've got a brother who's 7 years my senior and was into games. So if you have a brother who's 7 years older than you, chances are you're not always into the same thing at the same time, as if there's mm-hmm. a few years difference. So yeah. When he was into actual computers, I was probably still playing with Matchbox cars. I don't know.
Yeah.
Bad analogy. But I'd always get his handoffs, his hand-me-downs. Yeah. So I was able to sort of play on Atari STs. Was my yeah. first computer, and we weren't really a console family, really. But there was a time where we had the wooden Atari, but I don't remember playing it. I think I was too young. So my first gaming memories really are probably on the Atari ST, and it was where I found my love. And I think, again, it completely influenced by my brother. I used to do this thing, and I'm sure everyone's done it, who used to idolize a big brother or a father or a positive figure, role model. Is I'd go and sit and watch him play games and just be really excited for him and just enjoy learning these things that might be a bit too advanced for me to pick up, because tutorializing video games in the 80s and 90s weren't really a thing. So I used to play things like Demon's Winter was an RPG, Fantasy 1, 2, and 3, those sort of games. So there's RPGs on the ST.
I was an ST family, and prior to that it was a Spectrum. And when I lived in Germany, sort of 84 to 88, we had alongside the 16K Spectrum, later to be replaced with the 48K Spectrum, hardcore stuff that was. It turned out, not only did I have the Astro Wars, like little soulless console, and my brother had Defender, but we had the Philips version of the Magnavox Odyssey. And I've only worked that out in recent years because people kept saying about the Odyssey as one of the like the classic games and classic consoles, and I never knew what it was. And so one day I just looked it up and was like, that's what I had.
Outstanding. I'm one of the cool kids.
Yeah, and I do remember us having Pong on a black and white TV with little twirly paddles to make them slide up and down. So I'm fortunate enough to be an original Pong kid. And then you had football, where it had two rows of Pong. It's amazing what you can... I think there was one game, one version of that, they basically gave you overlays for the TV to make you think there was like more to the screen than just a bar that slid backwards and forwards. Oh dear, memories. Speaking of memories, if you could experience one game again for the first time, which game would it be? What game have you played that you've just gone, wow?
So... I think this, I'm going to give it to one, because I think last time I gave one answer for my, one of my favorite sort of memories was, because I can go on forever about it, it was magical. So there's a handful of them, I guess, from my gaming tapestry. Very early one was when I first decided to fully engage in PvP in Ultimate Online. And that was when there was no such thing as consensual combat. It's just, it was a free for all. But the penalties on that meant that you could become red for 5 minutes, and then you're freely available to attack without others getting that penalty. And the more you do it, the more infamous you become. And then I got to a point where I couldn't go into a town anymore. And this was my main character. I couldn't go into a town anymore. And also, the only way I could equip myself was going on eBay and buying like deadly poison katanas by the 100 load, and then arranging to meet them in game without a proper system in place. You had to drop it on the floor and then pick it up quickly before somebody else swooped in. You had to arrange to go somewhere super quiet.
Wow.
Shady and shifty.
The days before the World of Warcraft account selling on eBay and, you know, gold farming became a thing.
I used to love looking on there. I don't think I ever bought anything for WoW, but I used to love seeing people's accounts for sale and seeing like how much it would go for and how much time they put into it.
Yeah.
I think after that, more recently, I think I'm going to say Gears of War, because when I got the 360, it was my... resurgence into gaming, particularly easy accessible console gaming, and because it was such a great system and a great platform for connectivity. Xbox Live, I know it was in its infancy on the Xbox One, but on the 360 it was fleshed out, it was platform wide, it was just perfect. It had system level chat and party, and I miss them blades so much, Justin.
I can honestly say I never went on the 360. I think because I'd held the Duke and it was just so uncomfortable, I never even considered going on 360. And I remember going to the Eurogamer that had the preview for the PS4 and the Xbox One, and I played, I think it was Forza that they had there, and they were obviously demonstrating the force feedback on the triggers. And it just felt wrong to me. And I think as a result, I've just always considered that the Xbox controller, whichever one it may be, never felt right in my hands. And I just couldn't be comfortable with them. But
yeah, well, it's personal preference for a reason.
I know many people who said, bring back the blades.
It was just such a charming... I think it's nostalgic, but it would be terribly functional, I'm sure. But the reason Gears of War was my pick with that is because... It was kind of the Wild West of Xbox 360, the Xbox Live becoming such a huge thing. Yeah. And it was a Wild West where you didn't have to be in a party. You could just jump yourself and start going into matchmaking. Chances are the people in there aren't in party chat. So everyone, but by default, is able to chat to everybody. And because that system came with a built-in headset and a microphone, nobody had an excuse.
Yeah.
So you would actually find yourself making friends that natural way by you just start playing with them and you'd start playing well together and you start having a crack together and then you'd add them to your friends list and they're like, oh, I'm going to go and play with these guys now. We need another one. Do you want to come in? I'm like, yeah, man, I'll come in. And then you start adding all these friends and we weren't like going onto Twitter or onto website going like, anybody up for this at this sort of time? You just look at who's online and just jump into their game, jump out into somebody else's game. And it was great for that, but it was also hilarious, of course, because at that time everyone was a gangster. Yeah. Everybody was a gangster behind their microphone. All these kids were, I still to this day, it tickles me pink go onto YouTube and type in like Xbox 360 rants or Xbox 360 yeah. fails or stuff like that. And the messages that you get off these screaming 13-year-olds is the sort of things that's parodied now. If I saw it now, I'd be like, nope, don't believe it. I've such a cynical brain, Justin, because of doing this as an editing thing. I start to see behind the curtain a bit more.
You're all like, you weren't there, man. You weren't there.
And then the last one I'll say on that is similar sort of time in my life, a few years later, was Guitar Hero and Rock Band. Never before has a game brought together physically so many people for a mutual evening of entertainment, and we went as balls deep with it as you can. I had a really a big front room when I still lived up in Staffordshire, where me and Darren were living around the same area, and we would have the drums set up, two guitars, and the microphone. We'd get a microphone stand as well, so it feels a bit more rock and roll, and it means you can sing and play guitar at the same time. And on my gamer tag, like, I got the first one, the second one, the third one, and you were importing your songs. I was buying songs left, right, and center. My account, if I was to reactivate Rock Band on my Microsoft profile, I would have so many songs at my disposal. But then they started to release the keyboard part, the Beatles thing was absolutely fantastic for people like me and Darren. And by the end of it, we were able to have parties where we'd have seven people all actively engaging in this one thing. So you had a drummer, two guitarists, a singer, a keyboard player, and two backup singers for harmonies. So we were like, we'd have our one mic, we'd try and get wireless things. I think for some titles you could use the SingStar, not SingStar, that's PlayStation, but like...
Yeah, it was Lips, wasn't it?
Microsoft Lips. Lips. Yeah. My God, what a fucking name. Jeez, that was a deep pull. that was another outstanding benchmark, I guess.
And then it was a real big thing for a couple of years until, was it Harmonix, just went, hey, this is a big seller. Let's keep flooding the market with more and more product. And we'll go Guitar Hero 3, World Tour 5, Van Halen, Aerosmith, 6, and it was all in about 3 years, and you just thought, I've got so much plastic crap in my house now.
Yeah, I think Darren has got an entire unopened Beatles in the box thing, which is everything.
I had the band kit for Rock Band because I happened to pop into Curry's once and saw it going for £60. I thought, do you know what? I'm getting that. And that will encourage me to invite people to come round, and I'll stop being a social hermit. And
How's that going for you?
I did for a few times. And it was fun. I didn't go down the way of buying loads of instruments, but I did get, like, I preferred Rock Band to Guitar Hero, but I had, like, 1, 2, 3 Lego Rock Band, which was actually very good. And I got 4 as well.
Yeah, I think I got that. I got that just to import the songs. The same, but I would get all of the expansions just to import the songs.
Yeah, I didn't get the Green Day one, and I remember they also did an AC/DC one as well. There was a live AC/DC.
Yeah, there were some choices made, weren't there?
This is strange. Anyway, yes, trip down musical memory lane there. So, as someone with a history of different gaming machines, which would be your gaming machine of choice?
Can you say the PC?
You could say a PC. Yeah. Don't see why not. It is a valid market.
Yes, I will. I think I will say a PC. I mean, mine's not particularly great. So I don't have an active console in my life. I do still have a PlayStation 4 that gets plugged in very occasionally.
Yeah.
But that's it. And I think it's not through choice. It's just through the setup of my house, what's important to me. I spend pretty much all day in front of this machine, and I'm comfortable doing it in the evenings as well.
Yeah.
I'm never too far away from any type of game. I can't really do the big hitters. So at some point I'd love to have next gen consoles in my life, because there is a huge ease of use there. There's also the benchmark, the fact that you're on the same level playing field as everybody else. No one's waving the schlong around saying, I've got a better graphics card than you. Although that said, you do have the X's and the S's and the, do you know what I mean? Maybe we're getting there. But for the most part, you know that your system's going to run it to an acceptable level.
Yeah. Unless it's
PC, you don't always Well, unless it's Cyberpunk, yeah. Now, my PC isn't that great at it, and it's overheating if I'm giving it too much, and then it will shut down.
Yeah.
I found a settings. I thought, well, I know there's a setting in there that says don't shut down until you hit this temperature, but that's probably set like that for a reason, Matthew. Don't mess with that. So I found another setting where you could, and I don't know how accurate it is, but you could essentially throttle the overall performance of your machine. So I sort of dragged it down to about 80%.
Yeah.
And I've not noticed any difference just with my general day-to-day usage.
So when some people get all about overclocking, you're underclocking your PC.
I'm pretty sure Darren told me once, and maybe we should look this up in the edit when we listen back to this, but I'm sure he explained to me how that turbo button worked on his old computers, and it actually did the reverse of
the
that.
The turbo button slowed your PC down. It was effectively a crap PC emulator. I watched, I think it was like Nostalgia Nerd or something on YouTube. I watched a video on it. And because I had a 486 DX 100, but I remember people with, like, you know, 386s, and they all had their turbo button, and they were, oh yeah, press it in. But the thing that really showed it to me was I bought, and as you're an Atari alumni, you may remember the game James Pond RoboCod.
Yes, hell of a title.
And it's codename RoboCod, and I think that was the second one. But I bought the PC version of it when I got my first PC, and I think I had a Pentium 1, and I put the floppy disk in, and I pressed the loading screen came out, and instead of him having a little dance, he was a blur. It was just insane, and I managed to get the game to launch. I pressed right on the keyboard, and I swear the game ran so fast. If it was Sonic, like a quarter of a second, and he's finished the level. You know,
it was. So what was it? What was it doing? Was it downgrading the PC was visuals just, in order to give you greater performance?
The PC was just too powerful for it, and there was no throttle setting. So it just basically said, I guess that the programming on the game must have just been like, you know, it does all this.
And no one's going to have better than this.
Yeah, the game just ran it. But that's what the original turbo buttons were there for, was the fact that the PCs were, when they were developing the games, they weren't that powerful, but the ones that were then commercially available were more powerful and consequently running stuff too fast. So, yeah, it would be the equivalent of going into Excel, typing a letter and seeing six cells fill up with it, you know, like you've got an auto clicker on your keyboard. yeah, memories. Okay, when was the last time a game made you angry?
Gosh, I don't really get angry. I don't really get angry with games, I don't think.
I'm trying to do this boss fight and you cheating, stupid computer program and stuff like that?
No, do you know what? I honestly can't. Even when I was young, I don't seem to remember ever getting that wound up. I'm sure frustration kicked in. I'm sure it did with when we were all trying to figure out what the hell Demon's Souls was. Like, yes. That was frustrating because it was all in English. Like, you didn't have no idea what was going on. They didn't exist. I think it was a Souls game. It was it. Yeah. But no, I can't say that I've ever got angry.
I can give you an example from earlier this week, which was playing Mass Effect 2 on the Legendary Edition. And I didn't realise, but I unintentionally started the mission where it sends you to the Collector ship. And I picked my squad mates. Well, it turned out it wasn't the best choice of squad mates, or I kind of went to that mission a bit too soon. But I got to a bit where you've got to effectively do a little siege mode, and a super powerful one spawns every couple of minutes. And I was finding as soon as he spawned, my two squad mates immediately died, and I'd be on my own, and I would then be hit and killed, and I'll load it again and try again. No, I'll load it again, and again, and again, and after about 2 hours, I've kind of worked out a way that about 25% of the time will allow me to stay alive a little bit so I can take out the first wave. And on a couple of occasions, it got to nearly 2:30 in the morning, and I'm going, I've only got two things left to kill. God damn it, game, why are you suddenly able to shoot through a wall and kill me, and, you know, stuff like that. And then
I'm sure I've seen that before with people maybe playing Halo, where you're at the mercy of the autosave, and it'll autosave you as you're flying off a ledge.
Yeah, well, that's it. The autosave was, I came back the next day, turned it on, because that was at 2:30 in the morning. That's where I put the game down, turned it off, went to bed. I was like, I'm not going to stay up all night determined to finish this. Came along the next day, second attempt, bang, 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 straight the way through. I tried the slow and steady approach of, I found one spot where I can not be killed, and I can lean forward, take one shot, and go back into cover. And I'm just going to do that and take an hour to finish this level, but I'll survive it, and then I can move on and enjoy the game again. But I nearly lost my voice in frustration at accusing the PlayStation of being a cheat, and the AI of being able to do things it shouldn't be able to do. But there's nothing like a bit of cheese to find your way past things. Like on Demon's Souls, there's was it the old King Alant or something like that? If you've got a certain ring, you can hide at the edge of his area and just basically kill him with AoE poison mist. And it's really slow to do it, but you can do it without engaging him in the fight whatsoever. Fantastic. That's how I did it, because it was too hard for me to fight.
Well, it's a valid tactic.
I also worked out the duplication glitch that allowed you to, like, just basically spawn infinite souls and level up. So,
oh, man, I used a glitch just a few weeks ago playing Phoenix Immortal Rising. So I was watching some...
I've got that to play yet, and that's on the side.
Yeah, I was watching... Sometimes when I get a game that I'm really looking forward to, and I know it's that type of game. So when I started to really get into Persona 5, my first ever Persona game, and I started to really enjoy it, I started looking at videos of, like, the top 10 things I wish I knew before playing.
Yes, yeah.
So I'd be watching a couple around Phoenix, and there's I wouldn't say I guess it is a glitch if you want to call it that. If you collect a bunch of these naturally over time respawning items, and then you save the game and you reload it, there again. I did that once. I was like, do you know what? For the benefit of it and the loading time, that's once I'll do that.
Yeah. Well, my approach on these things is, it's a feature of the game, and if it allowed you to do it, you crack on. As long as you're not hacking the game, glitches and exploits are absolutely fine.
Yeah, so maybe not so much in multiplayer. I think that's potentially But again, I mean, again, I'll start looking at speedruns sometimes, and I find and particularly the ones which have the glitches enabled. Obviously, there are different levels and different types of speedruns, but watching even games I've never played before, like someone doing that was, I think it was IGN were doing a feature maybe last year, and it was developers reacting to the glitched speedruns.
Yeah.
And watching, going like, oh my God, how did we never account for that? And of course he's going to do that because of, I'm like, oh, that's fascinating.
When they re-released Tony Hawk's Skater 1 and 2, they had a session on whether it was IGN or another channel, I don't know, but it may have just been the devs themselves. They had, like, you know, the programmer and the... They had about 4 or 5 of them, and they're watching this speed run from, like, you know, from game load to full completion, and they're going, okay, he's managed to, like, wall ride a wall that doesn't exist, and one of them will sort of say, yeah, I'm responsible for that. That was my programming, and clearly I made a mistake there, and, like, just going, how is he? I played this game for hundreds of hours while I was developing it, and how was I not able to do this?
Well, look, my discipline in IT is QA. It's testing. You can never test for everything. So you know that a bunch of games... I mean, you want to talk about that. I mean, back in the day, if a game comes out, it's shit. I forget who it was who said this now. I think it was Kojima may have said, probably. He delays games a lot.
Yeah.
He said, a broken game is broken when it comes out. A delayed game is only delayed until it comes out. Or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There you go.
The worst one in recent years, was it Resi 5 that came out and then had a massive, like, day one patch which basically replaced the game? There was something a few years back. Anyway, your favourite gaming snack, if you're the sort that will sit and play for a long period of time, what will you interrupt your gaming for?
So I don't snack as much anymore, but it depends how much you care for the quality and longevity of your controller. So if zero fucks are given, you can go Watsits and Monster Munch all day long, but after a couple of hours of play and them greasy fingers, it's going to coat that thing. So you want some of that.
You're not going to be getting a PlayStation 5 and having that white controller if you're going with Watsits.
Absolutely. So I guess you want to go for something that doesn't leave that residue. I would probably go for like cold meats, like cold pulled pork, maybe. Okay. Something that's not there's something that's dry and meaty and sustenance.
Like pork sausages and stuff like that.
Yeah, and load of baby bells.
Can't go wrong with a baby bell.
True that.
Unless you get the like reduced fat ones. And
well, there are some things that I don't I don't subscribe to the idea of low caloried.
I bought some fruit pastels in the office this afternoon out of the vending machine because I saw it as a jackpot one where, you know, sometimes in these little vending machines where they have the rollers and you select something and it winds the roller and feeds it out like it's on a screw. And I saw that whoever had loaded the machine had put the second row of fruit pastels at an angle and it had kind of clipped over the ledge.
Oh.
And you know at that point, you're like, I've only got to get the first one out of the way and then I'm going to get two on the next go. So I paid for two, I got three. I was quite happy with that. So I went back to my team and I was like, right, you can have some free fruit pastels, you can have some free fruit pastels. And then I started eating them. And they did not taste like I remember. Like the old adverts where it's like, oh, I bet you can't resist chewing them. No, there was... They may as well have been wine gums with a tiny bit of sugar on the end. They weren't the old style one where they were basically glistening because there was so much sugar on them. They've killed fruit pastels.
Man, that's a shocker. But I'd say I do like where you get your little wins in the day, eh, Justin?
Yeah. you gotta be opportunist.
take your successes where you can.
It's like Saintly Stewart said, oh, I found a penny. And then later on, he's like, I found 2p. And I said, get yourself down the penny pushers and, you know, you'd be rich by lunchtime. Okay, number seven. I don't know how relevant this is anymore with your current setup, but if you weren't a gamer, what would you be doing?
Oof. Do you know what? If I was to do it all again... Yeah. So I often wonder to myself, if I was that 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid who was, well, maybe I was chasing skirt at that time, but late teenager, a lot of gaming in my bedroom, at my parents' house, how would I be spending my time now with the current access to technology? And I think I would, and I was going to put my effort into something. I think I would put effort into reaction videos for like movies I've not seen. So I watch a lot of them and it's real. There's nothing bad about it. There's nothing negative about it, really, because the concept isn't, they're not watching bad movies. They're watching good movies from the 80s and the 90s that they've never seen, but they might know bits of pop culture from it. So as a viewer, it's great because I get to do that thing. Like I was saying with my brother, like my older brother is, there's nothing nicer sometimes than sitting someone down who you know their tastes and say, I think you're going to enjoy this. So being able to watch somebody who I think I get their sense of humor, I think I get the things that they think are stylish. When they were watched, like a guy I really like watched The Kingsman, Secret Service. I thought,
yes,
that's going to blow his fucking mind. That's going to blow his mind. I can't wait till he watches that church sequence.
And great film, slightly unnecessary in certain areas.
Shocking, to say the least.
Yeah. I know what you mean, like, with that respect. I've introduced Ruth to a number of films that I've just sort of sat down while I'm there and going, right, I liked this film when it comes out of the cinema. We are now going to watch this film. You know, and hopefully, I don't think she's found any of them to be really dull. But what I have watched at the cinema this week is perhaps a bit bad, because I went to see the new CGI version of Dogtanyan and the Muskerhounds.
Based on the cartoon?
Oh, exactly the same as the cartoon, but CGI.
Oh my god, is that chick in the red hot?
Do you know what? I feel embarrassed saying this, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. She was pretty hot in the cartoon. She's not.
When we were that age, that was like prime time, kind of like, wow.
We're talking Juliet, aren't we? D'Artagnan's girlfriend.
Oh, I didn't learn the names.
Yeah, D'Artagnan's girlfriend. Yeah.
No, I'm sure there was a villain.
There was Milady.
Hang on a minute.
She's a cat in this one.
That's what I figured. That's going to play to a lot of people, isn't it?
Well, if people are into that, then fair play to them. But what the most annoying thing about that film is they'd have dream sequences and it would cut to 2D for a moment, except that they didn't use the 2D for the original series. And it just looked wrong. And then to add further salt in the wounds, on the closing credits, hey, here's all the bits from the cartoon you remember from when you were a kid. We're actually going to show you the proper cartoon this time. It's just like, make you sit through that. God. You knew it was bad when the first, like, half an hour, I mean, don't get me wrong, I know I'm a 42-year-old man, and I was watching this with a lady who's probably 15 years older than me. But I'm yawning in the first half an hour, and she starts going, Pizza Hut's open, right? We could just walk in. We didn't need to book, you know. And clearly neither of us is really interested in the film. But we got on, and we carried on watching it. Yeah. Anyway, I've got a bit distracted there. If you're into
question about it, though. Yes. Did they use the theme song anywhere?
Oh, the theme tune comes up at the end with a little bouncing ball so you can go, 1-4-0, and 0-4-1. Yes, it does. It does come in, yes, very much so. Ah, dear. You mentioned about, like, React videos. Do you ever watch any of the Corridor Crew videos on YouTube?
No, what's that?
So it's a bunch of people that, like, they'll do CGI retrospectives. So it'll be three guys who work in, like, special effects and whatnot. And, for example, one they did recently, they tried to recreate Terminator 2 with the Robert Patrick going through the bars in the prison, the mental hospital. So they tried to recreate that using modern technology and modern software and stuff. So one of them did it one way and one of them did it another way. And, you know, you got to see the fact that neither of them really was able to do it with commercially available stuff as good as it was back then.
Why was it better then? Was it just sheer manpower?
Well, it was just, they knew what they were doing, I guess. I mean, ILM are the industry leaders. But they, typically it'd be like a 15-20 minute video, and they may have like a stuntman sat there watching films with them, and they'll look at some Jackie Chan films, and it'll be like, right, how did they do that? Did they do that with the guy being on a wire and being pulled away? And sometimes with Jackie Chan films, they're obviously just going, no, he just jumped, you know, he's taken that hit, and it's really good. So sometimes they're like, they'll show where the scene's been cut. And like to try and do, I think they call it the cowboy switch, where the stuntman sort of goes off the screen and then the real actor appears and it tries to make it look like it's one shot. And they'll go, that's how they did that. And it's quite good to sit and just watch a few here and there. So if you like that sort of thing, give it a go.
I will. It's on my list.
Okay. If I've got one on my recommended later, I'll send it over. Right. What's your biggest annoyance in gaming?
I don't think it happens as much anymore than it used to, but it was forced inverted controls, and I guess that goes both ways. So like I would say I don't want to use the word normal, and people take the piss, but like if I'm playing a first person shooter or a third person action game. I am up to look up, down to look down, left to look right. No, sorry, left to look left, right to look right. And of course, a lot of people invert the up and down, which is fine. I appreciated the setting on the 360 where they had system level things where you could say default to inverted. Don't know how often it was used by developers, but I like the fact that it was there because some people,
you know, the PS5 now has what is your default game difficulty?
Is it really?
Yeah. So in the actual like menu when you're setting it up, it says, do you like to normally play on easy if there's an easy setting? So we'll just default it to you.
That's cool. That's cool. I wonder how, what it does with some of those games that just have many, many, many different peculiar difficulties. And very big, very...
What, like Devil May Cry?
Yeah.
Difficulty times 7.
So I think that the biggest annoyance is, obviously, when that's locked, it's annoying. But the only way it would annoy me, or it annoys me the hardest, is that if left is right and right is left, some third-person games... Some third-person games have done that, and it takes me time to adapt, and I have to do it a little slowly, and that's a frustration.
I've never experienced inverted X axis, but the inverted Y axis is a weird one for me. If I'm doing anything that constitutes flying, so, you know, Ace Combat or X-Wing or something like that, I will always want pull down on the joystick to represent pulling back on the flight stick and going up in the air.
100%. That's exactly when I'll do it as well, like with Elite or anything like that. Yes, 100%.
And if I'm playing a shooter, push up to look up. So I don't have a universal thing. It's only when my head is allowing me to think I'm flying something.
I think the logic I've heard in the past is someone saying, imagine that there's like a stick of wood coming out of the back of your head. You
yes,
pull it
exactly.
down to look up. I'm like, I don't know where you're coming from.
I think for me, what it comes down to is when you're doing a shooter, you're controlling the eyes. When you're doing a flight simulator, you're doing the ship.
Yeah, that's true.
So you don't you look up to move up or to yeah, I know what I mean. But I also remember on the N64, way back in the day when GoldenEye was a thing, and also Turok was the other alternative shooter, which I guess had less success, but would have a few sequels. One of them used the C buttons for looking, and the other one used the joystick. And depending on which game, I would need to change it. So I actually preferred one game doing it one way and the other game doing it the other way. I couldn't just like go, this is my universal method. It's really odd. I have no idea why. Right. Nearly there. If you could only play one game for the next year, what would it be? And Ultima Online is not really an option anymore for you.
Okay, if I had another... Okay, well, I suspect it will be the one that I might be playing for another year to come. And that's that I've recently just fallen in love with Sea of Thieves.
Okay, you're pirating. Is this? Have you fallen in love because of the latest Jack Sparrow content? Or have you been... just playing it casually or with friends?
I got into it very recently. I remember when the Xbox One came out. It's rare, isn't it? It was their sort of their big title on the platform. And then I saw that through osmosis, and it was like cross platform with the PC, particularly now, because I'm going to say Microsoft have done a tremendous job with the cross pollination between those that world. But it was all because I played it on my own, and then I played it with a friend. But how I've got into it now is it's what I've been talking about with Darren a little bit, and exploring more in my own time is enjoying Twitch as a viewer. So I've stumbled into people's channels and sort of got to know them. In fact, So I bumped in, it was Colm retweeted someone who was just like, hey, I'm live now playing something, and it's someone called Crafty Dragon. And and I popped in there, and I was just like, oh, this seems like a decent sort of community. And they were like, she was sort of saying that she doesn't play multiplayer games. And I suggested, I said, well, why don't you play Sea of Thieves? Because I've tried it with a friend of mine, and it was really good. And by I've seen other streamers play Sea of Thieves. And if you have a full party of four of you, it looks like the fun to be had is just dicking around and having fun together. There's no, the objectives are there, and they're generally the same. They're very repeatable, but the fun is in the exploration and the fact that it's an online world. It's obviously instanced to a part if it's trying to tell a story, but for the most part, you don't know what you're going to expect. So we've been playing this on a weekly basis now. The same four of us, for the most part, get together and we do it, and it happens on Crafty's stream. And this is a fascinating thing that I've been able to gain from looking at Twitch. So I tried Twitch. I think if I'd have jumped on it when it first got hot, when we were still doing weekly shows and we were trying to be pimps, then maybe I'd have had some early success.
I enjoyed coming home from work and seeing a note saying, Matt has played FTO. And I'm like, yeah, I'll sit and watch FTO. And I've mentioned on the show that session you had where I was going, Matt, the doors, shut the doors, you're suffocating your staff, shut the door. And because of Twitch lag, you, like, a few minutes later, you went, oh yeah, you were telling me to do that. Whereas I've now, like, lost all my crew.
Yeah, that was quite, so it was fun. And again, we were chatting, weren't we, about people who, like, if you're using Twitch, what does success look like? How do you gauge your audience? How do you portray yourself? Because with our podcast, it's the Matt and Darren show, right? So we always have control of that content, and we don't do it live. I know that there are, I think one of the great reasons why Veteran Gamers are just about hit 600 episodes is because, and they've been telling me this for years, every time I see them, I'm like, Matty, you're doing it wrong. You've got to move with the times. You've got to do it live. You've got to do it live, and then it automatically stays on a service while also getting fed to your subscribers as a typical audio podcast. But we like that control and that ability to be able to polish and look at it as a single thing and then present it. So I can see why I didn't get into it, particularly as late as I was. But being able to do it with other people, not only am I able to engage with four cool people to play the game together, but we're also part of that channel's entertainment for the time. And I think what it does, I think it's scratching my kind of podcast itch. So going back to what we were saying earlier, yeah, maybe six or seven shows a year me and Darren are putting out. And don't get me wrong, the edit is an absolute ball ache. My MacBook, which is my only Apple device to run any Mac OS, is very slow and very shit. So it's a ball ache, but I love doing it, and I want to put content in that way, Darren. Yeah. So this gives me a bit of an itch because I get to kind of play up a little bit. I get to know the fact that I can play around the fact that I know how to engage with an audience, even though I can't get an immediate response from them. So yeah. I really enjoy it. But the game itself, so yeah, that content has dropped. It's legit putting in, like, real story and real, like, things you can do in, like, maybe a 2 or 3 hour chunk, and there's chapters and what have you. It's a little early, it's a little buggy. It's certainly an evolving game. It has been for a number of years. They're constantly updating it, fixing bugs. So there's lots of quests, objectives not popping. I mean, successes not being registered, synchronization issues. So, but that aside, the game itself is great. And I've got no intentions of doing it. The wife mocks me. She's like, are you going to be playing your pirate game with your friends? I'm like, yeah. And then the next thing I know, last time it was like, it'd gone midnight. We're like, shit, we need to get out of here.
Yeah, you saw this week, I'm playing Divinity Original Sin with the same two people. And last I checked, which was certainly before this week, we had over 160 hours in. And that's just with us. We know we're approaching the end of the game. But Divinity Original Sin 2 is not the sort of game that you're going to get, okay, chat, what shall I do? What shall I pick on the answers here? But the fact that all three of us are having a conversation and we're sort of, you know, going, oh, who's got us in a fight this time? It does make it a bit more involving. You know, the fact that I'm streaming straight off the PlayStation, you get the messages on the screen. So although I'm sat with an iPad near me so that I can read when those messages disappeared, or if I'm distracted, I can catch up later. It does give you that ability to kind of say, oh, well, this person says this. Matt says hi, and like, everyone's like, hi, Matt. And, you know, it's nice to have that interaction, and both ways, from the people in the chat chatting about either, oh, wow, this looks very tense and technical, I don't think I could play this. And we're like, yeah, well, you know, we just kind of make it up as we go along.
Yeah.
It is... a fun thing to do. But I get Ruth sort of messaging me occasionally going, oh, you haven't streamed in a while, you should probably be streaming, Justin. Well, but see, even Ruth and I, when we stream together, we're doing a thing like, and it seems sad to admit this, but a joke happened a few weeks ago with Gaming with the Royals, And, you know, we now say, if me and Ruth are going to stream together, it's going to be a Gaming with the Royal session. If I'm doing my own thing, it might be Three Fools Play Divinity, or it might be, you know, Justin plays Douchebag Shepherd on Mass Effect, and it'll be specific to me. And, you know, when I was playing games with Colm, it would be LSL Plays, and then whatever the game would be. But it's just nice to have that interaction.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen some shocking things on there. There's obviously the meta-ness of it with. So one of the things that I did, I was like, right, okay. So it turns out I have Prime because I have a wife who likes to shop, and I get with that the ability, I believe, each month to essentially give them that
one Prime subscription. Yeah.
Yeah, I got no idea what that means for them. But it means something. But what I like to do, and again, this is me as an, I thought to myself, I want to be that really good, positive person in the audience who's just positive and essentially can try and elevate the stream as a whole and elevate the audience as well, get people engaged. So yeah. Some of the things I like doing is I found that you can invest in bits. So the 100%, the thing that Amazon are making
digital currency.
Yeah. So I dropped on 1,000 of them, and I saw that you could give them out in just ones or twos or hundreds and up to an awful lot amount if you wanted to go full simp or full whale, if you want to call them that. And I think I did it on Crafty's stream. I was like, okay, I'm gonna donate 100 bits, and it means that my name shows up on the stream, because obviously I did play around with OBS and the overlays, and it was really fun how you can like draw attention to it, and it makes me, it gives me a little warm feeling because I've donated, but also gives me a bit of attention, because I mean, it's easy to get attention from a streamer. You just gotta go in there and not be a dick, or even better, go in there and actively give them money to support them. They're gonna be your best friend. So I found myself doing things like, well, I've got all these bits now, I might just go and splash them out a little bit. I mean, share the mighty love across Twitch.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let's go to the homepage and like let's go to Just Chatting, because it's also fun to see people's their overlays, what they're seeing is, how they portray themselves. What are you? Who are you? You need to get that out very, very quickly. So I'd go into places and there'd be just like two friends sat there talking to their audience of maybe like 8-9 people, and that's my favorite sort of number to go into, because if you go into a stream with thousands, then
your voice is lost straight away.
Yeah, unless the content's great, and then you're there anyway. It matters not that it's a live stream. But if you're going in there for the enjoyment of the interaction, then yeah, about 7 to 12 is a real good solid number to go in and just introduce yourself. So I would go into them, and I would subscribe to them, or not subscribe. Yeah, is it a sub? No, not a sub. I'd follow them.
A follow, which means you'll start like getting, yeah, this person's online.
Yeah, so, yeah, you get your notifications.
Yeah.
So I'll do that, and I'll see how they've done it. So it's obviously, you can have the animations and the different things firing off through technology and science, maybe a bit of wizardry. And so that'd be nice to see that. And I'll get a little buzz because they'll say my name. Like, oh, thank you, Mantis Matfus, for following. Oh, anyway, what were we talking about? But other times I just go in and stay perfectly silent and anonymously donate 100 bits. For a number of reasons. Firstly, again, let's see what their animation looks like. But also, let's just try and make a snap judgment about this person, if you like, potentially. Like, how do they? Are they appreciative of it? Has it excited them? Has it made their day? I mean, I don't know how much 100 bits are. I imagine not a lot.
I was wondering if it's something I should explain and how the currency works. So when you sub to someone, take the Twitch Prime Amazon sub out of the equation. Off the top of my head, it costs the average person about $5 to sub for a month. And realistically, it doesn't get you anything more, apart from the fact that you don't see ads if they've got ads enabled. And sometimes they might do subscriber-only chat, in which case you'll be able to carry on chatting in the stream when other people are blocked from it. And it also means that you as a streamer can have tiered emojis, and if someone subscribes at tier 1, they unlock one of your emojis to use for the next month. Whereas if you're not a subscriber, you can sit in their channel, assuming they're an affiliate or a partner, sit in their channel for a while and talk and earn channel points. And then after a while, you can redeem them to unlock a random or a specific emote to then have access to for 24 hours. So you kind of get rewarded just for sitting there anyway. So
yeah.
If you say it costs you $5, and it feels weird being in England and talking about dollars, but that's the currency, the streamer gets 50% of that put into a pot. And when their pot reaches $100, they can effectively cash out and redeem the money. If you do Twitch Prime and you get your free subscription and you give that to them, basically all that's happening is they're still getting their $2.50 and you're not paying Amazon a further £2.50.
That's good to know that they're taking on that cost themselves.
Yeah, they get it's done as a free thing to reward you for having Amazon Prime, and it doesn't cost you anything. So you may have heard of the streamer Robotron, who does an interactive game called The Dark Room, and every couple of months he might do like a 48-hour live stream show. And when he's doing these, he'll say, like, any subs that come in during the 48 hours I'm doing it, any bits donated, any subscriptions, all of that money is going to go to whatever charity he's raising money for or raising awareness. And he makes a point during that of saying, if you've got Twitch Prime, throw it at me, because all you're doing is getting Jeff Bezos money and just giving it straight to the charity. It doesn't come to me, it goes straight to the charity. So yeah, do it. And as far as bits go, I bought like 100 bits or something a few months ago, because they were doing, I think it was a Pride awareness or whatever, but they did an offer saying if you bought so many bits at this point in time, you would unlock some additional emojis that you then have permanent access to. And so I bought some, and yeah, every now and then I'll sort of chuck them at people. As a recipient, a bit is worth a cent directly. So chucking someone 100 bits is the equivalent of paying them a dollar, which again goes into that pot and they can cash it out later. So, you know, I've been affiliate for since about March last year. I haven't got to 100 yet. So some people will make that very quickly. Some people will not. And some people may never do it.
Yeah.
That's why people are so appreciative of bits and of subs.
Oh yeah, so you might be the last 100 bits to knock them over that level for the first time they can redeem. That's actually quite a sweet way of thinking about it as well. So the only negative thing that I really saw with that experiment was, I was like, right, now let me go into a just chatting stream with some hot chick as the thumbnail with loads and loads of people.
Oh, like a hot tub party or whatever.
Something like that. I mean, yes. there was a goal meter on screen. Yeah. And she was waggling her ass, not wearing a fat lot. It's by no means a small thing, but I mean, as a, again, matching yourself, Justin, like a 42-year-old white dude. I look at this whole thing.
I thought you were about to say matching yourself as a wiggling your ass in a thong.
I don't remember doing
that.
No, I mean, I don't have kids and everything, but like, if my kids were on Twitch enjoying the sort of content they can get, and there's a lot of kids on there, so many kids on there, and a lot of these YouTubers who have that celebrity status and make an absolute mint, the people getting there, they're all the fucking kids. And that's great.
Yeah.
It's absolutely great. Knock yourselves out. I love seeing these kids trying to create content. They might fail. They might learn something from it. But the people who are essentially exploiting it with just, it's adult only stuff, right? It's 18 plus stuff. I don't quite know how that bit works, but if I thought that my 15, 16 year old lad was on here to watch that and then realize that there's people out there essentially reenacting porn and some peculiar stuff, because it just about nudges that, whatever the current rules are. And then you got to assume, like, do Amazon really want to ban these people because they're making a mint from it as well? But on this stream with this one lady, that was, like I say, that was a goal meter going. There wasn't long to go. And I thought, right, okay, I'll do my usual thing of exactly the same thing I've done all the way along. Anonymously donates 100 bits. And the look on her face like I'd given her a slap. She looked visibly disappointed, and she was visibly and audibly disappointed in the entire stream because she was nowhere near going to be reaching this goal.
Yep.
Takes all sorts of people.
I did see there was a video doing the rounds a couple of weeks ago of this... well, some people refer to them as booby streamers. You know, Twitch has since... After this hot tub craze became a thing, and the ASMR, which is like, you know, in a lot of cases, semi-naked people just kind of whispering into a microphone or whatever. Don't ask me. But since all this sort of thing came out, Twitch sort of said, okay, we need to give these a category. But they then also put out a press release because of obviously people saying, well, you're trying to make money off sex ultimately, because of these people with their cleavage on display. So yeah, the Twitch statement said, it's not our fault if people find you attractive. And it was like the biggest cop-out ever of just going, well, you know, we're not stopping it. But they do have a rule on actual nudity. So it makes me laugh when you then see there's body painters. And it's like, well, you just, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I don't care what you do, as long as obviously it doesn't breach the main terms of service and you're not an absolute arsehole about it. But like, if you want to sit there and look pretty and feel pretty and have your cleavage on, that's absolutely fine. As long as you've got like 18 only in the title and you're not a dick about it. And that's not necessarily, I don't know. What are you going to do? Not a problem either of us have, Justin.
No. My cleavage, luckily, is not that big. They were once muscles. But this video that was doing the rounds of this girl, she was like basically doing the verbal equivalent of what you've just said about donating 100 bits. This woman's going like, don't insult me by like donating a bit, you cheap beep beep beep. And it was like, well, it's still money in your pocket theoretically, mm-hmm. So shut up and just accept it. No, I know how much my content is worth, and it's worth more than that, and if you want to do that, just leave or I'll block you. And it's like, wow, that is someone who really loves herself. Yeah, right, I'm going to ask you the last question because we're in danger of turning this into a Twitch review show. Has a game ever made you cry?
Oh God, yeah. I'm trying to think what, but I'm an emotional fellow. I'll cry at a lot of things. I don't think anything's really coming to mind. I didn't get all wound up in the Last of Us stuff. I thought it was fine, but then again, if you're a parent, that sort of thing will hit you. Yeah. I suspect if I was able to play Brothers, I reckon I'd have cried playing Brothers if I didn't know how it ended.
Ruth has just finished playing Brothers, and when I heard, like, because she's emotional, she just today finished Final Fantasy IX for the first time, and like she texted me saying, I've done it, and I was like, yay. She said, I may have got a bit emotional, and she streamed like the end of it. So I will be watching the rest of it in a minute to find out how silly she gets, because she's been playing that game on stream and like doing voices for all the characters.
Really?
Yeah. So people are obviously just been like tuning in because of hearing the voices.
That's awesome. I think the most recent game I remember that gave me a real legit emotion to the point where I could feel it physically in me was... oh gosh, come on now. Gone Home.
Okay.
And I didn't play it. I probably played it maybe 3 or 4 years ago. It had been out for a while, and it was obviously one of the earlier and more successful of the walking simulators. And yes. I hadn't really played many of them before. I'd done a little bit of Everyone Goes to the Rapture, and I thought, I get it. I get why people enjoy this, because it's just a very slow, nice paced way of sort of telling a story with pretty visuals and puzzles, and it's never too difficult for the most part. But I shan't spoil anything, but the sort of the final sort of 10 minutes to that, where I'm learning about the story and the characters and the house and the whys and the wheres and the whatevers, when that last 10 minutes, when the last thing that I read from a diary made me think, this is what I'm about to go and find in the attic, I was sprinting to the attic because I was so invested in the hope that this hasn't happened, while also terrified at what I might find. I've got goosebumps now just talking about it. It was an incredible experience that will stay with me. I don't think I cried at it, but I was sat forward and I was just like, I couldn't focus on anything else. I just had to find out.
I have the game. I've not played it. I remember Colin talking about playing it. And I also remember like people making a point about the fact that you could technically finish the game in about 30 seconds just by going straight to the attic.
And oh, can you? I didn't know that.
Yeah, apparently. I don't know if there was a trophy for doing it, but it kind of made me think, well, maybe I will install it, do that, and then say, right, that's another game finished, and then delete it again. Like, everybody's gone to the Rapture. I was so bored of that. I just can't.
Yeah, I guess you need to be in the right zone for one of those. You really need something that's just different and just quiet. But I think my struggle with Everyone's Gone to the Rapture, I think, was the walk speed.
Yeah, it was walking. Yeah, I tell you a game I want to get at some point though is Oxenfree. Have you ever played that?
No, I know the name.
Right, so there are several characters that like they'll have dialogue as you go through the game, but then if you replay it, they're kind of more aware of the dialogue from the previous playthrough. So more things can happen because it looks very clever, and I've heard a lot of good things said about that. So that's one that I'm sort of keeping my eye on for if I ever see it go.
That sounds like a streamable game to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just looking at what else we've got on the show notes here, because I think we'll wrap up soon, but. We'll have a question on games we're looking forward to playing. And when I put this question in here, I did think like I'd be asking you if you've got involved in the current gen of new shinies, but I know you've already answered that. So games you're looking forward to playing. What game would you like to discuss?
Well, I'm looking forward to the day when I treat myself to a PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
I will at some point. I dropped on the 4 maybe halfway through its life cycle because I didn't need it. So I don't need it in my life now, but I will get it. And I'm looking forward to getting it and playing Cyberpunk on it. I know that the release of that wasn't good. It wasn't good. And I'm not really that invested in, I don't emotionally get invested if things are delayed or if things aren't great when they come out. I gave up on that a long time ago, but you could see the frustrations with people, and I think a lot of it was probably poorly warranted because the build up to that game was phenomenal. I mean, I'll still go back and watch the Keanu Reeves reveal. I mean, they kept that under bloody wraps, and that was like a proper bloody reveal. And yeah, they have pedigree with The Witcher. I didn't play the first two, but The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt was an outstanding action role playing game. So I'm looking forward to playing it in its entirety on a PlayStation 5 when it's available and I'm buying one. I mean, I even hear things like if you're playing the PlayStation 5 version, it's still, well, if you're playing it on a PlayStation 5, you can only play the PlayStation 4 version. There's no concept of a PlayStation 5 version. I don't know if it's still the case.
Well, I haven't paid any attention one way or the other. I believe that they have not got a next-gen patch, or at least that I heard them talking about an Xbox patch coming out for the next-gen, because people are already going like, oh, well, you can already play it. And it's like, yeah, but you could, but that was the Xbox One version. And, yeah, when a game is so bad that the console manufacturers are saying, we will take it back, that's when you know that it's not been delivered to the promises that were raised.
No.
And unfortunately for me, I think that put me off ever really getting involved in it. I mean, if it comes free on PS Plus one day, then like I probably would. But it just, I think to me, with my very naive and limited amount of knowledge, it just looked like a glorified version of Watch Dogs, really.
Yes, you might be right. Well, time will tell. We'll find out. And it's interesting because what you're going to talk about, because this is great, I can see show notes. I've not seen show notes for years.
Yes, this is a game that was announced today. It was announced today. Ghosts of Tsushima Director's Cut is coming out later this year on PS4 and PS5. Just before I speak about that, so you're definitely thinking PlayStation rather than Xbox?
Yes, well, with the PC, it seems pointless having an Xbox, which is fine. I think Microsoft are fine with that.
Just get yourself a controller and off you go.
Yeah, still using a 360 plugged in one.
Especially with the Game Pass now being PC as well.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost of Tsushima or Tsushima, it's beautiful. I've seen lots of videos of it just being displayed. I know some people found it a little bit boring in places, or in its entirety, and I think you're always going to find that. I'm sure me saying I found Everybody's Gone to the Rapture boring, I'm sure there's people going, "You heathen, it was one of the best games of its generation." And, you know, you're entitled to think that. That's the beauty of games, is that they're subjective. No one's going to come and take your fun away from you. Well, maybe your parents if you've been naughty, but...
All right. Well, so I played Ghost of Tsushima first time around. That was one of the last times I had the PlayStation 4 plugged in. And it's a great game. It's a crack game. It looks great. It plays great. It takes a bit of getting used to. It's quite a... It's a well-done... combat system. It unlocks in a lot of ways to suit different playstyles, which is always great when you have a game like that. It's an open world game, so it's bound to suffer with the repetibility, or people thinking it hasn't got enough variety and can be boring. But sometimes that's the fault of the player. I find if I ever am playing an open world game and I find myself getting bored, it's because I'm mopping up stuff on a map. It's like, if I'm getting bored, you need to start mainlining the quest, fella, and sort of like unlocking some more. Because sometimes, like, I'll find myself in the first area of a game thinking, right, I'm gonna mop all this up, and I think to myself, but you'll be back here no doubt anyway, and next time you come back you can double jump, so what are you gonna do?
That's kind of my experience. Like, you were talking about The Witcher, specifically The Witcher 3, and I started playing it, like, just going, okay, there's the next quest, and then it just got too much for me, and I was like, I'm never going to finish this game if I just keep trying to clear the map of icons, and I just kind of mainline the story in the end and got through it in about 40 hours. But the director's cut of Ghost of Tsushima, it's up-resing to 4K and target 60 frames a second, so it's going to look nicer, even prettier, hopefully. And it's also got a DLC. It's got a new island to explore.
So, really?
Yeah.
I know they did some work already on this for your PlayStation 5 users. They've given it the HD treatment like they used to back in the day.
Yeah.
That's going to look stunning. Have you got a good telly?
I have a 4K TV. It certainly does not do 120 hertz, but it does the job quite happily. I think in the grand scheme of things, the HDR is not as effective as it could be, because it seems to just turn on a really bright backlight all the time. So every time I load a game, I have to try and turn it back down again. Right, so just got a couple of listener comments that need to be read out. Firstly, from Knackered Back, this is from a couple of weeks ago before we sort of took a bit of a break. She said, "Are you recording Thursday night? If so, make sure you ask Justin about his giant light bulb he got for his birthday." That is not a light bulb. That is actually it's a plasma ball. And that's because Ruth was very kind. She heard me say that it's one of the things that I always wanted when I was younger and never really, well, I never got one, and she was kind enough to supply me with one. So every now and then, especially when I'm playing Mass Effect, I turn it on as my own little portable ED on the side, and I sit and stroke it and watch all the little electric tendrils sparking. We've got a question for you here, Matt.
Okay.
So I tweeted out saying, "Don't want to keep you all waiting too long for another podcast, so episode 399 will be recorded tonight with Justin and Mantis Matt from Midlife Gamer, or Midlife Gamer Net. And Gav, at Postman Gav, says, "Superb news. Can you ask Mantis Matt when him and Uncle Fister will be recording next, please?"
Ooh.
So based off what you said earlier, about 6 months.
No, we're due another one, actually. I think we're...
Are you doing an anniversary one?
No, we're not. We're not. So by all accounts, Gav, thank you for reaching out. We're looking, fingers crossed for next week. Fingers crossed for next week. We'll see. Ooh. We'll see. But we're very much in the, we're in the headspace and we're giving ourselves up. We decided to make the best joke. Okay. We made a joke that only we found funny, and it's only a joke you can make every almost 13 years that we would, podcasters would sometimes, you would celebrate milestones. So I remember we, on our 50th show, we had a big celebration. On our 100th show, we had a big celebration. The first time we had a live guest in the little studio that we had. And all this sort of good stuff. So we've been barreling like a slow thing towards episode 300. big slow thing. And we've had this joke in our heads for the past 3 years. Darren's always said, we're like, do you know what we're going to do? When we get to episode 299, we're going to season 2, episode 1. And I said, you know what? That's the funniest thing. That's the fun. It's taken us 13 years to get here. And we went from 299 to series 2, episode 1. So we'll be doing series 2, episode 2. And of course, we're gonna put a box set together. Do you know what I mean? We'll. You can buy it all season 1 finally in its completion. Let's see, are there any deleted scenes? We do actually think about it because I forget which service we were using. It wasn't Libsyn. It must have been a mid thing we used where they enabled, it may have been actually, but they enabled a mobile app and we didn't really get a choice to opt into it, but people could then download this mobile app and did. But all it did was just stream the file from the server through this app instead of just getting it through iTunes. But then people noticed in the app it had this section called bonus or free bonus content or extra stuff or something like that.
Okay.
So we thought, well, maybe we should do this. So when we were still recording face to face, I'd moved away. I think I was in Cardiff and I was traveling back. We did it for a while, actually, including when we were still in the same town. We would record little sort of videos on our phone, a couple of minutes. And then they would go up as bonus content for people who had got the app. So I think I probably got about 25, maybe 30 weird little videos, which some people may have seen, some people haven't. I've got things like the audio, the raw audios of some of the times we would sing. So Darren's a great singer. He's got a hell of a voice, but we'd record ourselves singing like really well and put some harmonies into it and just put it out on a show because why not? Why not? thank you for the question, Gav. Next week it'll be coming in your ears very soon, and as promised on series 2 episode 1, we do have another new piece of music. What Darren did for the first one was he reached out to, I forget the service name, it's like where you pay somebody else to do your work,
right? Yeah.
So he just paid someone some money. He went, right, I just want a 30 minute intro. It needs to be catchy. It needs to say welcome to the Midlife Gaming Podcast with Darren and Matt. It's all it needs to say. No brief. That was the only brief. And the first thing he gets back, right, we're using it. So we're going to have
a... Did you mean a 30-second intro? Because you just said a 30-minute one.
Oh, yes. Sorry, a 30-second. I know our shows can be long. It's not always because of that. It's because, as you can hear, I seem to like the sound of my own voice. And as you can tell, I haven't spoken to anybody in this meeting for a while. So either you've had all the goodness out of me and I'll be nothing left for Darren, or this is me just warming up for Darren. And once again, wow. I've said it a few times, time will tell.
Well, for the listeners, just a sneaky little hint, you have kindly offered to join me to do the episode 400 as well here on Last Save Loaded, which will be our long-awaited music show talking about and featuring music from games from the past that were impactful or memorable. Just to throw some out there, I remember playing Gods on the Atari. And I know there's actually a remaster on the Xbox and the PlayStation stores, and I've looked at it and I've kind of gone, ooh. But I remember being so blown away by the standard of music on that generation of computer, the Amiga and the Atari, that I was recording on cassette the soundtrack.
I think I did that, and I think I probably did it with all... I mean, are you allowed to have more than one Bitmother's Brothers song?
Of course you can.
All right.
Are you about to say Xenon 2?
Mega Blast. I don't know, probably. I'm trying to think, did Speedball have good music?
Okay, yeah, Speedball. Certainly Speedball 2, Brutal Deluxe.
Yeah.
That's it.
Hey, 42-year-olds.
we were kids in the 90s.
We were. Well, no, yes, you're absolutely right. Thank you as well. I figured today was the was a trial run. It sounds like I've passed the tests. But yes, I'd love nothing more than to join you on your 400th show. As I didn't get a chance to do a 300th show as well, it'd be nice to sit on a big benchmark for you, Chief.
Yeah, well, you said like people like to do milestones, and we never really kind of went out of our way to do some. I think if I remember when we did episode 100, I did the intro with all the different guest hosts that have been on the show, saying like, "Hi, my name is Matthew Moore. My name is
Genius,
yeah, whoever." I went back through all the different shows we'd had and clipped in all the different introductions. So there was like a 5-minute long, you know, guest and names. For episode 200, we actually, no, it's for 100. We did, for the run up to it, we basically said, if you want to have a chat with us, let's catch up, let's record some bits and like have 10-15 minutes talking to different people. And then the show was just all these different conversations. 200 was a live show. We did record that one streaming from Google Chat or YouTube. 300 for us. I can't remember what we did for 300. I think we were singing more or something like that. But certainly when we did 350, because of the way Colin would pronounce it, I said, "Oh well, let's call it 3Fidio, and then let's do a 50 Cent parody, or rather, try and sing it ourselves." And I'll never forget the infamous moment where the file was sent to me from Colin, and let's just say the file that went on air had lots of beeps on it.
I remember that. I do remember that.
Because I got the single version, he got the album version. They were different. And it's some words aren't supposed to be sung by certain people.
Yeah, that's very true. I'll tell you what, fella, why don't we look at coming to bring it home on a bit of a somber note for a hot second, but
yes.
I know that we had a mutual friend and a mutual listener and a mutual community member who spent an awful lot of time on in both of our worlds and our ears. And that was that was Trev, who we lost a couple of years ago. So yes. If it's not too self-indulgent, I would like to dedicate this show to Trev, because you know what, people? Life ain't as long as you think it's going to be. He certainly shone bright, and unfortunately for half as long. But look, people out there, you shine as well as you can for as long as you can. Positivity, you hear me, folks?
Absolutely. And Trev's been mentioned on this show a number of times, or at TrevDXB, as he would forever be known on Twitter. And you may remember the days when he used to record himself and send it in for audio, and we'd always play it and then listen back. And I remember how much he loved playing Dishonored, to the extent where when it came up to the anniversary of his passing, I was like, I'm going to play Dishonored in memory of Trev. So Matt will be joining me. We haven't yet set a date. We're not going to be, especially if you're going to be hopefully trying to catch up with Darren, you'll need to make sure you can get that under wraps before coming back and having a chat with me. And I've also got to do some work to get the files ready so that you know what we're going to be talking about. In the meantime, if you listeners have any last minute suggestions for music tracks that were memorable or important to you in the past, then you can email them to lastsaveloaded@gmail.com. You can tweet at lastsaveloaded. You can tweet me at onya6. And Matt, how would people get hold of more content from you?
Well, they need to remember Mantis Matters with 1T in the Matt bit. You can follow me on Twitter right there. I'm on, I think I'm on Discord there with some numbers, so don't worry too much about that. Twitch, I'm on there as that, but don't expect to see me doing a fat lot of streaming anytime soon. But if you keep an eye on me on Twitter, that's probably the best place. I don't really tweet, but I will like retweet something if I'm doing something.
And what's the Twitch stream that you're partaking in as a party member?
Crafty Dragon. It's crafty underscore dragon underscore. I think the elevator pitch I would give is she's like me, but she's a girl, but she does use the C word. So once again, it's all tight. It's all in the clues in the title, people. Over 18s, adult stream. Not because of adult content, but because of adult senses of humour and conversations.
Well, it's been far too long since we... Well, since we've never had you on the show here before, and but it's been far too long since we've had a chance to embrace in a manly hug. And have you got plans for real life meetups in the future? Or at least desires, if not plans.
100% desires. I guess planning can't happen just yet, but I suspect MLGX will be back in some form.
Well, I will be doing whatever I can to attend the next one, so I'm looking forward to it. I guess we'll leave it there, and we'll be back with you, dear listeners, very soon with talking about some music. So until then, it's been goodbye from me.
And I guess it's been goodbye from me.
Thank you very much, and goodbye. Some people might consider it insignificant, but it was just, a gesture. And
all right, fire alarm's realize... going off in the house. Fire alarm's going off in the house. Feel free to use this in the outtakes. Back in a second.
Oh dear, that there's something that that was not planned.
And the house isn't on fire. We're good.